mind. Should it be there or should it not? Rufinus, as early as 400 AD, wrote the first great treatise on the Apostles' Creed. As I've told you, it began around 130 to 180 AD. And as it grew in the Western Church, but primarily it grew through different church fathers. Irenaeus, as we've quoted in a couple of the sermons, had his version of the Apostles' Creed. And in some of these versions, there was descended into hell. But generally, it was disputed. Some people left it out. And so the first occurrence of this particular phrase is in the Sirmenian Creed of AD 359. And the earliest we can trace it to what was known as the Apostles' Creed, which grew out of the attempts of these early church fathers, as we've explored, to identify the very most important things about the Christian faith. For two reasons. Number one, there were people that needed that kind of teaching. I mean, everybody didn't have a Bible in those days. Nor did they have five, upon which four usually never get opened and get dusted off at the coffee table. They relied on the very few learners who were spreading out through the church as the theologians. Not even the priests oftentimes could read and write. Imagine how difficult it would be to communicate clearly the facts about the faith. And yet this little phrase keeps popping up. And it finds in almost every example its scriptural structure from an obscure little passage in the first letter of Peter. And we're going to read that passage right now. Peter was writing to a church that was struggling, as almost every one of the churches when a letter was written were doing. And yet this letter particularly was to remind people to stay strong. It was a more theological letter. It was corrective. And yet it used imagery that seemed a bit odd to some of the early readers of the book, including this passage found in 1 Peter 3, beginning with verse 18, the word of the Lord. For Christ also suffered for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, in order to bring you to God. He was put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit, in which also he went and made a proclamation to the spirits in prison, who in former times did not obey. When God waited patiently in the days of Noah, during the building of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were saved through water, and baptism, which this prefigured, now saves you, not as a removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. One little phrase in that. Made a proclamation to the spirits in prison. Who were those? Well, he makes it a little more clear in the next chapter. Verse 6 of the fourth chapter says, for this reason, the gospel was proclaimed even to the dead, so that though they had been judged in the flesh, as everyone is judged, they might live in the spirit as God does. May God bless the reading of his word. Will you pray with me? Lord God, I ask that your wisdom would be among us as we discuss this often controversial little phrase. Help us to understand it in some new ways. Help it to guide and guard our hearts even as we enter our Lenten journeys, so that we may know more fully who you are, so that we may realize more completely who you want us to be. To that end, take the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts and our minds together, for Lord, you are our rock, our strength, and our Redeemer. Amen. Some people believe it shouldn't read to hell at all. It should read he descended to Hades. You see, it seems that in the earlier translations of the Bible, they were pretty loose with the word hell. It's used to translate Hades, which is a Greek idea of death and what happens in death. Hades is the underworld, a shadowy place. You cross the river Styx and you're in Hades. But it wasn't particularly damaging. It was just the place of the dead. And in the Hebrew, the word Sheol, which also in the Jewish idea meant a place of shadows. It was a place where both the righteous and the unrighteous went. It was a place where there was no light and people moved around like ghosts. And there was no idea of what resurrection would become. But there was the idea of resurrection in the Jewish theology. Somehow those spirits go on and they are more than the bodies. But they didn't develop that thought very well. And then in the New Testament, Jesus used a geographical location, the Valley of Gehenna. And it was the trash dump of Jerusalem. And in the trash dump, there were fires that burned the refuge. But the reason that it was designated as the trash dump is that many years earlier, one of the kings of Jerusalem sanctioned the offering of infant babies as sacrifices to the foreign god Moloch. And when Josiah that made that a forbidden act and actually destroyed those who were offering these sacrifices and made this valley cursed, so that when Jesus was teaching and he used that valley, he would point to a burning place, a place where there was refuse, a place where there was smells, a place that wasn't nice. And he said, this is what it's like when you're out of the presence of God. You don't understand how good God is sometimes unless you find yourself in this place. And that's not where you want to be. And so these three words became translated hell in different forms. But maybe what the creed was saying is Jesus descended into the place of the undead. At least that's what some thought. You see, there's very weak scriptural support for this phrase. It's not something we turn to often. In fact, most of you are probably still puzzling at the words of Peter. I do. It's a very difficult language that Peter uses to express his ideas. But you have to know a little more about what Peter's facing. And so Alan Lewis claims in his book Between Cross and Resurrection, the one that I talked about, the theology of Holy Saturday on this past Sunday, he said that our tradition clearly states that there is something going on in the life of God between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And though many Christian denominations choose to replace it with a less dawning phrase, descended to the place of the dead, it still is a place, and it still is worth us considering. What is that place? Why? Why would a perfect God, who's made the perfect sacrifice after living the perfect life out of full and total love for all of his creatures, have to go to hell. I mean, one man I remember, he was a graduate of the Academy of Annapolis in 1939. During World War II, he was a wing commander on an aircraft carrier. Flew many missions. He's a good Southern gentleman, small in stature, but incredibly wise and interested in learning. But he came up to me after a Bible study we were having one time, a long time ago, and he said, "I will never say that phrase, Jesus descended into hell, because I cannot believe that the Jesus of all love, God would regulate him to the same place that's held for the Adolf Hitlers of this world." He said so. When I get to that phrase, as only a respectful man from the South, a gentleman, could do, I simply remain silent. What is hell? Have you thought about that? I mean, is it a place where the little red pitchfork goes running around in a Halloween costume? Is it a place that mirrors Gehenna, with flames burning and smells that are awful? Is it, as C.S. Lewis describes, a place more like the Jewish land of shadows, where people are not actually very present? And they certainly are, according to C.S. Lewis, caught up in their own world and not very interested in the world of those around them. And so his biggest characteristic of hell is any time that people disregard other people. People tend to close out and think that someone else's problems are not as important as theirs. Well, it's interesting to think of hell, because some people would describe hell as the experience of living on earth at times. Fights with horrible diseases, relationships that rage at one another and end in enmity, the fear and complete out of controlness of not having work or an income to support your family, the isolation that you might feel at not being good enough for your parents or for your partner or for those around you. Whether that comes from within or without. Some people think that the real hell is the condition that we all recognize, where there is an absence of God, an absence of caring. Artists have tried to capture that absence of God in a variety of different ways. On April 27, 1937, Adolf Hitler did a favor, quote unquote, for his friend Francisco Franco, a general who was leading the rebellion against the Spanish Republic. For almost 4 hours, the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe, practiced dropping incendiary bombs on a source of resistance to General Franco, a little Basque village in northern Spain. The stark black and white photographs that witnessed the aftermath of the bombed village of Guernica prompted Pablo Picasso, to paint perhaps the most disturbing of his work. In the mural Guernica, viewers are assaulted by a jumble of tortured images. The entire village in the painting has been twisted by the explosions. Buildings, animals, and people have been deformed by the violence. And frightening as it is, we can still pick out recognizable images. An agonizing woman holding her dead child. A mutilated horse bleeding in pain. A severed arm clutching a shattered sword. It's as stark an image of hell as anyone can imagine. How often has that scene been repeated in our human experience? Now, if I quickly understand my little white-haired captain and his noble refusal to say that phrase, descended into hell, right, then I find myself sympathizing with him a little bit. I don't want to paste my Jesus into that Picasso picture. I don't want the Jesus I know of all love and all caring to be there. Yet the reformer John Calvin saw a great significance in this phrase, descended into hell. He referred to the clause as a not to be despised mystery. And in grappling with the mystery, Calvin concluded that the descent was not a trip to the netherworld, but it was actually the spiritual torment of Christ. The torment that Christ suffered on the cross for you and for me. Calvin claimed that Christ's death was not just any death. It wasn't simply the physical pain of death that Jesus was inflicted with as he was put on that cross. But rather, as Calvin thought about it, it's the kind of demise that God reserved for the truly wicked, because Jesus carried all of the weight of every Guernica, of every angry, assaultive word that had ever been spoken, of every time that a fist was used to explain the pain, of every time injustice was done. Christ descended into hell by suffering the full weight of God's curse as he died. And so for John Calvin, it was that curse that happened when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? For Calvin, the weight of those words was the weight of a God who could not look upon the absolute evil that was put on that cross. So instead of it being simply that he went to hell, he was already in hell even before he expired. And the hell was instituted by his own willingness to accept every wrong act, every misstep that had ever happened. It's hard to imagine something worse than that kind of aloneness. If that's true, if John Calvin is right, when Jesus died, he felt the complete worst any of us can ever feel about a situation. And he was denied the access of God, his Father, to be there with him. Other reformers, like Luther's great theologian, Philip Melanchthon, took a different approach. When they saw descended into hell, they thought that this was Christ. For the first time, it was the first activity of someone who had conquered death. And so as he died on the cross, he had earned the right to descend to the place of the dead, to show that life is victorious over death. So descent for him was not the miserable image that John Calvin had. It was rather a victorious image of the conquering Christ entering into the gates of hell and the forces of hell, kicking down their gates and lifting them, kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, busting up the bad guys. It was a life-affirming act. And in many ways, Melanchthon's theory was kind of like a theory that became popular in the medieval ages. It was called the harrowing of hell. A harrow is a farm implement that you use for clearing a field when you're ready to plant. A harrow is like a gigantic rake, and it lifts things up like if there are bits of roots of a tree or a clog or of dirt or a stone. It will lift them and throw them out of the field so they won't impede the growth. And the harrowing of hell was the idea that Jesus, when he traveled and made that descent into hell, swooped through the halls of the underworld to battle Satan. To battle Satan for the lives of the glorious saints that had been there all the time. You see, we know that Abraham died before Christ. Moses died before Christ. But these were men of God. David was called a man after God's own heart. But he never lived to see Jesus take on the weight of his sin. Even that sin with Bathsheba. And so, Jesus' first act was to go in and rescue these saints out of hell. And as he did, he led the armies and he'd bring them out to preach Christ to ones who had longed to hear it, but had never heard the good news of the gospel. And to lead that army of people out of their undeserved hell. Well, each of these perspectives, as we enter into Lent, has value. Whether it's John Calvin's idea of a Christ who suffered immensely beyond our understanding, or whether it's Melanchthon's idea that it was a victorious act, or even if it was the harrowing of hell, where Jesus descends purely for the sake of the former saints, it holds validity. But there's one problem with it. All of those theories do not appeal to the verse and the passage that most of the early church fathers used when they were looking at this phrase, descend into hell. None of them reference 1 Peter. And yet, 1 Peter tends to be the reference that caused this little phrase to be in the Apostles' Creed. And people battled for its position there. And I think maybe it's the least talked about idea, because maybe it's the least satisfying option of all. I mean, you see, what 1 Peter suggests is that Jesus descended to hell, and if we read it right, it was to preach the good news to those who were wicked in the time of Noah. To those who were so obstinate, so evil, that God had given up and said he needed to destroy the land, and he chose only 8 people to save. And if 1 Peter's right, it was those very wicked people that Jesus descended to hell to offer salvation to. So, whether descent is just another way of looking at the crucifixion, like John Calvin, or whether, like Melanchthon, it's a kick down the gates Jesus going in there, or whether it's the harrowing of hell, where a liberty blast from the trumpet sounds and the saints come marching in. 1 Peter tells us that it's different than that. Our God cares about even the Adolf Hitlers of the world. And that's a hard thing to swallow. I understand a man who fought for the liberty of the world saying, I cannot believe my Christ could enter into the hell that's reserved for those despots like Adolf Hitler, who cheaply use humanity. But Peter seems to differ. He seems to say no. No, our God can embrace the most wicked of the wicked, because our God has seen it all. And loves it all. Loves all of us. Even those of us who don't recognize his love. Even those who don't seem to be concerned about his love. Over hell, Dante wrote, was an inscription that reads, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here." Peter says, no. You don't ever need to abandon hope, because there's no ends of the links that our God can go to draw you back into his love. So although all of these options stir our imaginations as we enter our Lenten journeys toward a cross where Christ did suffer on our behalf, maybe it'll also motivate our Lenten journeys to see, what does this mean for the way I live with my neighbor? With my spouse when she's just absolutely unlivable with? Or that coworker that always cheats to get everything he or she wants? Or that bully at school that won't ever leave me alone? Do we say to those people, abandon hope, all ye who enter here? Or is Jesus just looking for another opportunity to call all people into his love? Even the hells of this world. Amen.